Greatest Couch Potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Kristen Dreyer Kramer, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies.
This week we're going to be talking about 42, which is nothing to do with Hitchhikers or Galaxies or anything like that.
Or math.
Or math. No, there's no math. No. 42 is just...
It's a number.
It's a number. That's the Jackie Robinson movie, of course. We're also going to talk about Scary Movie 5, which is also a number, a more scary number. Hopefully there's not a Scary Movie 42 coming up anytime soon.
It could happen.
Yeah, but I am here now to declare victory.
Of course you are.
I'm declaring victory.
I know. You win.
I win.
I know how this rolls.
Because it was Evil Dead winning the box office at $26 million. Now, I did not say Evil Dead, but I said there'd be a horse race between Evil Dead, Jurassic Park, 3D, and G.I. Joe. And
really? Was there a horse race? Because I'm looking at this, and there doesn't look like
well, no,
that much of a horse race.
I mentioned Evil Dead in my prediction, therefore I win.
All right.
You had said G.I. Joe at $23 million, and you were pretty close. You were really close on that, $21 million. Evil Dead made $26 million, which was really pretty good for
Surprising.
A horror remake.
Yeah.
R-rated horror remakes don't always do that.
No,
well.
Definitely wasn't expecting that much.
So that's good. I mean, I was happy to see Evil Dead. Although it is interesting, there have been some discussions that have been sparked about the questionable feminist, non-feminist nature of Evil Dead, because the people that really take it on the chin in this movie are the ladies.
It's true.
Quite literally at times.
But really, I mean, it's a horror movie.
It's a horror movie.
When do the ladies not take it pretty hard in a horror movie?
The Thing. John Carpenter's The Thing. Because there's the only female in that movie is like a character on an episode of Let's Make a Deal they're watching on television.
And nice.
And I think the computer is a girl.
If I recall, All the Boys Love Mandy Lane was a pretty good feminist horror movie.
Yeah.
In a way.
I guess you could say that. But yeah, so then
did that ever even come out? I don't know if that ever even came out.
I keep getting relieved. They're like, oh, it's coming out. I'm like, we saw it.
What, 2007, maybe?
Something like that.
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
It was, what's funny about All the Boys Love Mandy Lane is I remember they kind of had screenings all the time. They screened ours early, like a day earlier than everybody else. Mm-hmm. And like right after I got home from the screening and there was an email that says, oh yeah, this date has been pushed.
By the way, this isn't opening so much.
Was that our fault? I guess so. The Croods came in next with $21 million, just very much barely under G.I. Joe. Jurassic Park 3D did $18.6 million, very close to my $25 million. But that's actually not bad.
You win.
Yeah. Victory! But yeah, that's pretty good for a 3D re-release. That's on mm-hmm. the higher end.
Yeah.
It's not as big as, say, Titanic, I don't think, but it's commensurate with, like, Star Wars Episode One. And then it goes down to the, you know, Olympus Has Fallen, Temptation, Oz the Great and Powerful, blue, 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 down there. What's interesting is Jurassic Park, talk about Jurassic Park here,
mm-hmm.
it has a worldwide lifetime gross currently, or at the time of, you know, me pulling these numbers, $937 million. It did not reach $1 billion when it was released, but it made like $900 million.
That's pretty impressive for 1993.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was because then, I think it was like the highest grossing one until then Titanic like, blew it away.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm wondering, is it going to reach 15 billion? There are only 15, or I'm sorry, not 1 billion. There's only 15 films that have reached a billion so far. And there's more every year because mm-hmm. the numbers are available at this point. But I have a feeling that's part of the reason that was pushing Jurassic Park. Because that's what got Star Wars Episode One into the billion-dollar category.
There you go.
So I think once it opens, like in China, and it gets all the...
China, the
Chinese market is huge for 3D.
We talked about this last week.
I know. Offended everybody. What's interesting, though, with another thing about IMAX, the Jurassic Park 3D, is the IMAX version took in $6 million out of its $18 million gross. That's...
And really, if you're spending huge. The money to watch it, why not?
Yeah, but that's...
Yeah, go out and see it in IMAX, because it's fun.
Yes, it is very cool. But that's 30% of its gross from IMAX, which is not... terribly common
mm-hmm.
for a movie. So that's interesting. Anyways, if you want to get a hold of us, you can reach us at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can give us a voicemail. Leave us a voicemail at 740-205-6456.
We got and it works.
It works still.
Yeah.
We have somebody.
Once in a while, we have to test it out.
And thanks to Thomas from Seattle.
Thanks, Thomas.
One this week. You can go to fatguysatthemovies.com. You can go to facebook.com/FGATM. You can go to twitter.com/KevinCarr and yell at me.
And I'm Katie K. Reviews, and you can find me at nightsandweekends.com or realdiscovery.org.
And you can yell at her, too. But
you can.
You don't
free.
Have to.
It happens all the time.
Like,
you wouldn't be the first.
You're listening to Fat Guys in the Movies with Kevin Carr and Kristen Dreyer Kramer. First of all, a little bit of movie news. Before we talk about anything else, I just have to, again, declare victory. It was announced this week, MacGruber 2.
And that is a personal victory for you, how?
Because MacGruber was an awesome movie.
Okay.
It made my top 10 list.
Did it?
Yeah, it made my top 10 list in the year.
I didn't hate it. So there's that. I enjoyed it.
There's a group of MacGruber fans out there. And I have a feeling that this one will do better than the first one, simply because it couldn't do any worse.
Because
the first one did terrible.
Yeah. So what are they doing? Kickstarter?
I don't know. I wish.
You know, I've read that it could be videotaped in somebody's backyard.
Still would be awesome. Still would be awesome with MacGruber. That's classic MacGruber.
Nice.
Classic MacGruber. The other thing we want to talk about, we didn't talk about it last week because scheduling conflicts and stuff like that. We actually recorded this before it happened. Roger Ebert
probably asked, as it happened.
Yeah.
Really.
No connection.
No.
But yeah, uber famous film critic Roger Ebert passed away last week, and he was, what, 70?
70, yes.
And it was eventually, you know, the cancer that took him.
Which he had been battling for at least 10 years.
Yeah.
And it's been a long time.
It's been a while, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have anything, any thoughts you want to eulogize? I'll let you go.
You know, it was one of those things that I posted online after it happened. I said, you know, as much as it wasn't surprising, it was surprising. It was one of those things that Roger Ebert has been battling cancer for so long, and he did it with such strength that, you know, it was one of those things that he just seemed unstoppable.
Yeah.
And it was a shock when I found out. We were just talking about that, how you and I had both been away from our computers at the time, and we both came back and went, hold on.
Yeah.
And, you know,
because
Just the day before, he had announced that he was taking a break.
Yes.
Or a leave of presence.
Yeah.
And he was talking about how it would finally give him a chance to do something that he'd always wanted to do, and that's only review the movies that he wanted to. Which, good for him.
Yeah.
You know? But yeah, the day after this announcement. So when I first read it online, I thought that everybody was talking about that announcement that, well, you know, Roger Ebert is, you know, taking time off. But no, it was a shock.
Yeah. Well, and the thing that's, he was very groundbreaking. Probably the most famous film critic. And not that there's a lot of film critics out there that are, you can count them on one hand in terms of famous ones. You know, you've got Gene Siskel, Roger Ebert, they're
and
out
us.
There. And us, of course.
Of course.
But you got like Gene Shalit and Rex Reed, you know, Leonard Maltin. These are the names that everyone knows.
Right.
But it's a very small category.
It is, yeah.
Of like nationally recognized film critics. And one of the things that I liked about Roger Ebert was he was just sort of that everyman. He could be a film snob, sure.
Yeah.
We all can.
We have our moments, yeah.
But, and even this name of the show, Fat Guys of the Movies, is the tip of the hat to him and Gene Siskel because they started sneak previews, and then they moved to At the Movies in syndication, which was their show. So I liked having that recognizability to the name. So obviously I'm already, you know, sort of paying homage to them with the name of the show.
Well, and they were something that, you
and
know.
He was fat too, so.
Nice.
He was.
As we were coming up into the business, it's one of those people that you always wanted to be like.
Yeah.
You know, that's what we always wanted. Mm. I wanted to be just like Roger Ebert.
Yeah.
You know, because he was that guy that everybody liked. Everybody wanted to hear what he had to say about things.
Yeah.
And that's what we all strive to be.
And they cut through the noise of the stuffy film critics. And they were a little bit. If you took him and Gene Siskel, they had their sweater vests and their tweed jackets and stuff like that. But there was a relatability to him. I read a story this past week. Obviously, there's a ton of stories about him.
Right.
But I read a story talking about, well, is no one's ever done a TV review show that's had the same sort of impact.
Right.
You know, when Gene Siskel died from brain cancer, it left a hole and took him forever to get somebody in there. And Richard Roper did fine, but it still wasn't the same.
No.
It still wasn't the same. And part of the reason that I think it worked, it was because of who they were. It was the personalities, and it's what you want to hear what they said. And they show a long clip and they just prattle on about a movie. But you listened and you watched for them.
Because you liked them.
Yes.
They were human, you know, unlike a lot of film critics that before then, I mean, film criticism has taken quite a turn since then, but it was one of those things that, you know, they were normal guys.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. So you will be missed, Roger Ebert, and we will go to a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about 42 and Scary Movie 5.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr and Kristen Dreyer Kramer. We have just tackled, you know, all of the news of the week.
Yeah.
You know,
MacGruber 2 and Roger Ebert.
Right, the important stuff. So now maybe we should start talking about some movies, actually,
yes.
You think?
Yes, let's talk about the movie.
What do we have up first?
I'm sure Roger Ebert dodged the bullet by not having to go see.
Ouch.
Which is Scary Movie 5. The people behind all those not-so-scary and sometimes not-so-funny spoofs do up another installment in the Scary Movie franchise.
Who's the cutest baby in the world?
Little baby Aiden.
Oh, jeez.
I feel like there's something in this house.
Babe, I heard something.
There's nothing to worry about. It's just...
Man, that's a lot of pain.
Blaine Fulda, professional psychic.
I'm gonna have to get some of your personal belongings here. It's just so I can run up for ghost and demon residue.
Hey, this is stealing.
Demons got my fist, ma'am.
Spoiler alert, they didn't screen this for us or anybody.
There's a surprise.
It's a Weinstein release, and it's a spoof.
I'm trying to think the last scary movie that I saw.
The last spoof they screened for us was Epic Movie.
I'm trying to... I think I missed that
or
one.
Or Disaster Movie. No, it was Disaster Movie.
I remember seeing Disaster Movie.
Yeah. It was bad.
It was a disaster.
This is not done... Well, there's a whole level of crap spoofs done by Jason Freeberg and Aaron Seltzer.
Yeah, that's a genre in itself.
Yeah, and those are awful. I've actually thought the scary movies were okay.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the first two were Keenan Ivory Wayans, and he's very funny.
And the cast in this movie...
It's out there.
It's crazy.
And Snoop Dogg and...
Everybody, and of course Lindsay Lohan and Charlie Sheen. Everybody is in this movie.
They went to rehab and they got everybody out.
Nice.
If only they made it 20 years ago, they could have had Robert Downey Jr. in it as well.
Nice.
But yeah, the next two, 3 and 4, were done by the Zuckers, who are from Airplane.
Okay,
and I thought they're very funny guys. I think I can't remember whether it's Jerry Zucker or David Zucker. I think it was David Zucker who directed them.
Okay.
And they got very cheesy and just almost overly referential. This is not directed by the Wayans or the Zuckers. So here's the
All
thing,
right,
people.
Then. Here's the thing.
Two big warning signs, aside from them not screening it. Any movie that ends with a 5, that's
really
questionable.
Really? 5 is an unlucky number?
Well, no. I mean, they've made a 5th movie. Leprechaun 5. You know, something like that.
It's true.
And anything that's blankety-blank movie, you got to be leery of. Could it be funny? It might be. It probably isn't.
It's true.
We don't know. Go at your own risk.
Preemptive suck.
Preemptive suck from the fat guys in the movies. And, well, and Kristen.
And me.
Kristen. So, yeah. That's all I have to say about Scary Movie. Scary Movie 5. There's nothing more to say.
I don't think there is, no.
Yeah.
I think we might as well just move on.
You're listening to Fat Guys in the Movies with Kristen Dreyer Kramer and Kevin Carr. Next up, we're going to be talking about...
42.
Whoop, whoop.
This baseball biopic tells the story of Jackie Robinson's history-making road to Major League Baseball, aided by Brooklyn Dodgers executive Branch Rickey.
Jackie Robinson, a black man in white baseball.
I want you to know I'm there for you.
In my heart.
Think about the abuse that he's going to take.
You want a player who doesn't have the guts to fight back?
No, I want a player who's got the guts not to fight back.
You give me a uniform. You give me a number on my back. I'll give you the guts.
First of all, I want to congratulate you and give you kudos for baseball biopic.
Thank you.
I would have never come up with that.
Really? Because no. In my notes I wrote baseball bromance.
Ooh, that's a good
which
one.
Which was also my favorite,
baseball
actually.
Bromance biopic.
Mm-hmm.
Booyah.
Because it really is a bromance.
It is.
I mean, there are so many guys hugging in this movie, and
this
there's
not,
a whole lot of love going around this movie.
This does not pass. What's that test called where it's like if a woman in the movie has to have a conversation with another woman that's not about a man? Have you heard of this?
I have not heard of this.
I can't remember the name of the test. I'll have to look it up. But what it is, it's to test. It shows whether, you know, it's a test to show how still male-centric movies are.
Oh, yeah.
That it doesn't pass this test if a female does not have a conversation with another female that isn't about a guy.
Hmm.
You know, so the Harry Potter movies don't count because anytime a woman's talking, she's talking about Harry Potter.
Pretty much, yeah.
Because even if
true.
There's, you know, now like Sex and the City counts because they talk about things other than guys.
Like shoes.
Yeah, yeah. So
yeah, because that's not, you know.
That's not sexist at all.
No, not at all.
But anyways, back to, let's go to racism. Let's drop the sexism. Let's talk about racism. 42. My biggest hurdle with these movies is it's just, it seems such a ludicrous thing to be like, black people played sports.
It's true. And it does have those really manipulative moments. You're like, yeah, I know what you're doing here. There's one scene where, you know, the white dad takes his white kid.
Oh, that one I hated.
Oh, and it's terrible. And, you know, the white dad starts yelling at Jackie Robinson about how you don't belong here and we don't want you here. And the poor little kid is like, yeah, what dad said. And then,
yeah, go home. Yeah. N-word.
And then Pee-wee Reese comes out and, you know, puts his arm around him and he's like, oh, I don't know, because I love Pee-wee Reese. What am I supposed to feel? And yeah, there
are
moments.
I think
you
totally captured that child's inner monologue. Oh, no, Mr. Bill, what should I say?
Just that conflicted look on his face. And you're like, oh, I get it. Yeah. I get it. But, you know, this movie, we see these movies how many times a year? I mean, this inspirational sports drama.
You get a good one or two every year.
At least. Yeah. And the thing is, I fall for them every time.
It works. I mean, it's a button
pusher. Every single time.
And it is very heavy-handed because it's like most of the cast is white people, which I find, and the director is a white guy. Mm-hmm. So it's Jackie Robinson, and then it's this very segregated movie. and all the white people are either like people going, well, no, we should let him play, or they're the biggest racist, throwing out every word you possibly can.
It is terrible.
Topped off with Alan Tudyk, just...
who is hilarious.
He's great in the movie.
I mean...
So it's a button pusher.
Yeah.
And it's fine, I mean, but it does lay it on a little thick.
It does. And even though you know it while you're watching it, you know what it's doing. You're like, yeah, I don't care. It's fun anyway. It is a crowd pleaser.
Yeah, it's a good movie. It's worth seeing. Mm-hmm. Like I said, it's very heavy-handed. It lays it on thick. Harrison Ford plays Branch Rickey. Yeah. And he does a good job at 90% of the time not being Harrison Ford. And then he slips into Indiana Jones. And there's like one scene that's supposed to be this really powerful moment, but it's shot in silhouette. And he's wearing a hat. He's like wearing a fedora and a bow tie. And I'm like, he looks like Indiana Jones. It looks like the beginning of an Indiana Jones thing. So he is 90% of the time good in the movie.
He is definitely in the usual cranky old guy role that he's been filling
lately.
It's a
little bit different, though. He's not doing Clint Eastwood.
No. No.
But I'm not a Jackie Robinson historian, so I don't know.
No, I can't say that I am either.
I don't know anything about baseball, for that matter. But the thing is and the director, Brian Helgeland?
Helgeland?
Helgeland? Well, I don't know. He does a decent job sort of making the movie about Robinson's struggle, both on and off the field, because it's not like Major League where they're like, we got to win all the games and then win the pennant. And
right.
There is no game. Like, there's one I was reading up on it, and one of the classic moments in the movie where he gets his first run kind of thing as a Major League Baseball player, they end up winning in history. They win the game by two. So it's not that was like the deciding run.
Right.
So they don't have very many of those moments because that's just the way history plays out.
Right. And it's a personal movie. It's not about the team. Yeah. Although it is. I mean, it's about their accepting him and taking him in. But it's about him.
Yeah. So final grade?
Kind of rocks.
I say kind of rocks too. When we come back, we're going to talk about some other movie-related items.
Oh, yeah.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr and Chris and Dariah Kramer.
Hello.
I'm going to take this segment to talk about something else that has sort of hit the news. And it is about Tyler Perry's latest film, which is official title, Tyler Perry's Temptations, Confessions of a Marriage Counselor.
It's a very long title. And it did not screen.
Did not screen
for
at all.
Apparently very good reasons.
It screened in like San Francisco and LA, bigger markets, because I know people who saw it. But here's the thing. First of all, before I even continue, I am going to drop some major spoilers for Tyler Perry's Temptation. If you have not, it's been out for 2 weeks, people. So if you haven't had a chance to go see it, and you're dying to see it, but you don't want anything spoiled, I'm going to tell how it ends. You just want to kind of just, you know, tune out for a little bit. But I have a feeling most people, if you've seen it all, if you want to see it, you've already seen it. So
probably.
I normally don't like to drop spoilers, so I want to give that big, long.
It's true. Spoilers are no good.
All right. I did not see this the week it opened. There was another movie that didn't screen, so I had to go see that at, on Thursday night. So mm-hmm. I wasn't able to see it prior to reviewing. And then I wasn't racing out to go see it. Then I started seeing these articles cropping up. And one of them, which was titled, Tyler Perry Isn't Just a Bad Filmmaker, He's a Terrible Person, was
there
on Jezebel. Jezebel.com. You read this, didn't you?
I did read it.
And what happened was I read this article, and I'm like, and it's talking about what happens in the movie, and I'm like, oh, this can't be real. This is the writer exaggerating. She wasn't exaggerating. This was everything she says happens in the article happens in the movie.
It's pretty amazing, really.
The story is this is, and the reason I bring it up is because it's getting criticism from basically not feminist organizations, because to say that it makes it sound like, you know, you're getting the National Organization of Women picketing. I don't think they care about Tyler Perry.
Really?
But
because he's Tyler Perry.
Well, yeah.
He's a major force.
Yeah. Well, but here's the thing.
He dresses up as an old lady.
Yeah. There, he should have played the mom in this one.
Nice.
But his audience, his target audience are African American women, Christian African American women.
Okay.
And so there are some people who are saying he has very, let's say, overly oppressive views in this movie. The basic story is about this woman a marriage counselor telling the story of her sister, which is about mm-hmm. as blatant as you could guess it's her. From the beginning, you know it's her because...
Really?
It's like written
because
like...
Because she said it's her sister.
Yeah, because she said it like it's a 70s TV show delivery. But it's about her sister and how she was working and she was married to her love that she knew from her childhood. And then this guy comes in her office and he's really sexy and he's rich and he's trying to seduce her and all that sort of thing. She's like, no, I love... And he's like, no, you probably just have boring sex with your husband and with the lights off and the pillows fluffed. And she comes home and has the most awkward, trying to have crazy sex with her husband in the kitchen. And the conversation goes basically this. Hey, honey, I made you a sandwich. Honest to God, that was the line. I made you a sandwich. She's like, I want you to take me, give me, you know, I want you to, you'll be an animal with me. And that was the line. And I was just like,
nice.
You should make her a sandwich more often.
Gave you some ideas, I think.
Yeah. And then she ends up, the guy's...
Do we have bread at home?
Yeah. Mm. Like, I'll go home and make my wife a sandwich, you know? And so she ends up, the guy ends up seducing her, and he gets her on his private jet, and literally pretty much rapes her on the jet. Because she's like, no, she's struggling, and he's holding her, and he leans her over, and he's like, now you can say you resisted. Again,
nice. Actual
line from the movie. They have sex, and she enjoys it. Hence, she had extramarital. She had sex, not in the bedroom with the fluff pillows and the lights off,
mm-hmm.
on a jet with not her husband. Ergo, she must be punished. So then she was depressed, and it was her fault.
In a horror movie, she would have gotten punished in a wonderful,
she would have had
wonderfully gruesome way.
Her face ripped off.
It's
by
true.
A girl from Evil Dead. But so then what ends up happening is the whole thing is he's the devil. That's
seriously.
Yeah, seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Shows up in a red sports car. He's got fire in his apartment. He's the devil. And her mom's a preacher, and she comes home. She's like, that devil in the red car. I'm like, oh, wow. Thanks for pointing that out, Tyler Perry.
Seriously, this all sounds like a bad Lifetime movie.
Oh, it's terrible. By the end, turns out that he's abusive. His ex-wife, conveniently, has run away from him and works at the pharmacy with Judith's husband.
Mm.
Finds out she's HIV. Because he's HIV because he's been banging around everybody from here to Paris or whatever because he flies his jet to Paris.
Of course.
And she gets HIV. And this is all because she strayed. She gets punished with HIV. And that's what's caused a lot of people to be really cheesed off about this.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've then marginalized all of HIV victims.
As a punishment.
As a punishment.
It's what you get.
Yes. And the punishment goes to her, not to the guy. It goes to the woman for having liking the sex. There's also this weird little like subtext that she doesn't cook for her husband. There's literally a scene where the mom comes over and the guy's like, oh, her husband's like, I haven't had a home cooked meal in a while. And she's like, you don't cook for your husband anymore? And I'm like, what? This is that's what's on the table.
Fine cooking.
Yeah, and
I would like to know what that is because. Yeah. I probably am kind of questionable in that That's area.
Right. You have animal sex in the kitchen with your husband. Shame on you. You get HIV. You don't cook for your husband. Shame on you. You get HIV. Mm. This is what's real. And the Jezebel article was written by a woman who has HIV.
Mm.
And she's like, you've just marginalized an entire group of people and done it in the most antiquated mid-1980s sort of way of it's a punishment. It's not an actual disease. And the reality is a lot of... Most HIV infections, you know how most HIV infections are attained nowadays?
How?
Intravenous drug use.
Yes.
That is where the rampant spread is happening.
Mm-hmm.
It's not from having extramarital affairs and getting pretty much raped on a plane
right.
on your way. This movie, it really kind of reveals this very almost backwards thinking from Tyler Perry of women need to be in the kitchen, they need to be in the bedroom, but they can't have any sort of no naughty sex, maybe on birthdays and anniversaries. Because they kind of actually say that.
Really?
They imply that they have, and I'm not even going to speculate what the naughty sex was. Because I would probably embarrass myself. It couldn't be this because that's normal. Anywho.
So I have heard that you had quite a Twitter feed from this experience.
Well, I went to go see it, and I saw it was an empty theater because it was like Wednesday night.
Well, yeah, Wednesday night at like 11 o'clock. Yeah. So that's what happened.
I was tweeting about it, and then I got all these people saying, you know, this is not your intention, but this movie sounds like it's awesome. Because it is so bad. It is so offensive. And so just, I mean, Tyler Perry always does gospel plays.
Right.
They really are. But this guy must have the most depressing life because people are either... First of all the women are morally ambiguous, you know, victims yet doing wrong things and it's not...
It does kind of make you wonder what Tyler Perry's life is like.
Yeah.
I mean, what kind of women does he have in his life?
And what kind of men? Because the men are either these awful, horrible devil guys or they're real big pushovers.
Hmm.
There is no middle... There's no average people in any of his films. So, yeah. Thought I'd bring that up. I thought that'd be interesting. You should see it.
Okay.
I want you to see it.
Okay.
I think I told somebody that I offered when it comes out on video that we come over to your place and I make.
You did actually offer that because, and there must be a lot of cocktails before I will sit through that movie. I have to tell you.
I watch it. I'm like, this would be great if there were more people. Because somebody's like, are you alone? I'm like, yeah, but there should be more people and more booze.
There you go.
Anyways.
You saw it at a theater without a bar, so.
I know. What was I thinking?
I don't know.
I had popcorn. That was it.
That is not good enough.
No, it's not. You're listening to Fat Guys of the Movies with Kevin Carr and Kristen Dreyer Kramer. We only got about a minute to talk about box office.
Ooh.
And what do you think is going to win this weekend? I'll give it to you. I'm
really,
going to claim victory no matter what you
me.
Say.
I know.
You want me to say first?
Go ahead.
I
think it's your turn.
I'm just going to be fun, and I'm going to say it's going to be $42 million for 42.
Nice.
I really don't think it's going to make that much.
No, I'm going to be a little more conservative. I'm going to give it to 42, but I am going to give it $18
million. Wow!
Mm-hmm.
That's low.
Well, I looked it up, and Moneyball made 19.
The difference between... And here's why I think it's going to make more. It may not make 42, but here's why I think it'll do better, is because it's got a... it's not about baseball.
No.
I think that has a little bit more to do with it. It's and I think it will bring out...
But it doesn't have Brad Pitt in it.
It doesn't have a fat Jonah Hill in it either.
No. So it's a give and take on that one.
Yeah. Well, we shall see. Okay, let me write this down. I said 42 for 42.
Yeah.
And you said 18 million?
Yep.
All right. We'll see who wins. It's going to be me.
Of course it will.
So we got to go to a break. When we come back, we got to listen to a voicemail, and we're going to talk about DVDs. Welcome back to Fat Guys in the Movies with Kristen Dreyer Kramer and Kevin Carr. We just got through telling about all the different films, 42 and Scary Movie 5, and my take on Tyler Perry's latest disaster.
Yes.
That's making money, so I guess he's getting the last laugh on that one.
He always does.
But as we move on to this final segment, we had a listener voicemail from Thomas from Seattle.
Yay.
Let's go ahead and play that for you.
Hey, Kevin. This is Thomas from Seattle. I had a question for you and Kristen. I saw recently the Flash film and Deadline Hollywood had a spat over who originated some random piece of information. And I was wondering if you think the whole crediting information, while in a way it's good, because, you know, if somebody worked hard to get a scoop, they should get credit. But that whole argument seems kind of moot at this point because a big piece of information, like Robert Redford getting cast in Captain America 2, you know, within 5 minutes is going to be disseminated to probably like 100 different websites, 1,000 different Twitter feeds, countless Facebook pages. And who originated it in a way doesn't matter because it becomes part of the internet ether. So is this whole argument about who said what first kind of silly at this point? Anyway, great show, you and Kristen, and I'll talk to y'all soon. Bye.
All right. Do you know the background of this? I sent you a couple links, I think, to...
Yeah, and I've been looking into it and kind of following it here and there. It's hard to follow everything. But yes, I have.
Here's the basic... First of all, the background is, in general, in journalism, you always give credit to where – if you get information from another news source,
right,
you give credit. That goes back to newspapers and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It made a little more sense when, like, a newspaper would publish a story and then, like, the nightly news on TV would say, well, you know, the Wall Street Journal said blah, 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 blah.
Back in the days of the scoop.
Yeah. You could have the scoop because it's instantaneous. And that's what Thomas was saying is, you know, like you can go to Comic-Con and you could not go to Comic-Con and just follow everybody's feed and then just repost everything like 5 minutes later. The background to this, the other thing I have to say, Deadline Hollywood is run by a woman named Nikki Fink.
Mm-hmm.
And she is a horrible person. She is an egomaniac, jerk, just has no moral center whatsoever. She is the person who claimed credit last year for getting the Gangster Squad trailer pulled from The Dark Knight because it had people getting shot in a theater. She claimed credit for getting that taken.
Really?
Yeah, she claimed credit. It wasn't her.
I'm pretty sure that nobody else thought of that. I'm
pretty sure that it was a Warner Brothers thing that they just, you know, because she's like, well, they didn't pull it until I said something. I'm like, well, okay.
No.
You know, I could say, like, you know, don't murder anybody, and then somebody murdered someone. You know, that's my... Yeah. But the thing is, Nikki Fink is... She has an inside track on stuff. And I think this was... The stuff that was written by a writer, Mike Fleming, who's...
Right.
Kind of cut from the same cloth, or at least follows her lead.
Clearly.
Yeah. And they have a lot of good insider information. You get a lot of really early information.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the thing, though. The basic seed nugget of this is... Matthew McConaughey is mm-hmm. going to be in Christopher Nolan's Interstellar.
Yeah, go figure.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And what happened
was... But that's not the big news.
Yeah, no, the big news was... What happened was... This is the sequence of events. Deadline posted an article that basically said, oh, there's unconfirmed reports that Matthew McConaughey... They were the first one to mention this casting news.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a rumor at the time. Then what happened is the Star Tribune did a phone interview with Matthew McConaughey, and they asked him about this, and he said yes.
Mm-hmm.
So then the Star Tribune wrote their story and said he has confirmed that he's going to be in this, without giving any sort of credit to Deadline Hollywood, which they were in no need to. Went to the horse's mouth on this one.
Right.
And asked the guy. That was their source.
Mm-hmm.
People are saying, you're in this movie. Are you in this movie? Yes. Boom. There's your story. Then Shed.com wrote an article of it, linked back to Tribune. /Film wrote an article, linked back to both Shed and the Tribune to say, hey, this is... And that's all it was. He's confirmed he's in this.
Mm-hmm.
And then Mike Fleming on Deadline Hollywood had a little bit of a hissy fit because no one gave him credit for his... It was not your story.
It was an entertaining hissy fit, though.
It was. Well,
I did find it entertaining as I read through it.
And you should read the comments section because I'm assuming it was Peter Chiaretta from Slash Film wrote a, hey, thanks for reading my stuff.
Nice.
You know? But this guy was complaining that Slash Film is like taking their stories. Here's the thing. This is not Woodward and Bernstein. This is not Deep Throat.
No.
This is a unsubstantiated rumor that then was later confirmed by a totally other different source.
Mm-hmm.
You can't claim it. And then I learned about this because one of the things Deadline does, which is very much a D-bag thing to do, is they start a lot of their headlines with told ya, T-O-L-D-J-A,
yeah.
Exclamation point. And I first heard of this because I saw somebody tweet out, they go, look, you can't start a headline told ya and then complain about somebody else acting like a D-bag.
It's true.
And that's true.
Mm-hmm.
So, first of all, this is not intellectual property here. You know, you're not doing a Mickey Mouse steal.
And I think it goes beyond that even. I think, you know, Thomas made some good points in his voicemail. You know, yes, if you're writing an article about something, it is good to credit where it came from.
And they do. Slash Film does.
Yes. But here's the thing. How do you even know anymore where it came from? Because I go online, I go to Twitter, I find a million articles about the same thing.
Yeah.
How do I know who broke it first? I have no idea.
Well, and sometimes it'll happen like at a press conference, mm-hmm. or a news will break at a press conference or in an interview or a round table or something like that. So, yeah, you're right. Nobody knows where some of this is.
No.
Or there's multiple people that hear it.
You know, and I'll retweet something mm-hmm. on Twitter, but I don't know if that's where it originally came from. It's just where I originally read it.
Yeah. And when I write for Film School Rejects, they kind of have a rule that they say, if you get it from a site, you link to the site.
Yeah.
And you don't just copy their information.
Common courtesy.
So a lot of times what we do with FSR is, you know, we'll link to the site and then you just give your take on it. And say, well, so-and-so, you know, Chud reported that Matthew McConaughey is going to be in this.
Right.
We think this is a dumb idea, or we think this is great, or...
Exactly.
I hope he takes off his shirt, you know, or something like that. I'm pretty sure he will.
I bet that's your take on it.
That is my...
I'm pretty sure.
I hope he's wearing, you know, chaps with no behind.
Nice.
And then a cowboy hat through the whole thing. He talks in his southern drawl.
I hear he had to take off his clothes to win an award.
Isn't that so? Anyways. So, yeah, there you go, Thomas. The thing is, yes, you should, and people do. That's the point. People do... In vast majority, and all the respectable sites do give credit where credit's due.
Mm-hmm.
Deadline afforded no credit. And when Deadline actually posted their Told Ya article, was like 3 days after the Star Tribune ran it. So they're the ones who were...
Kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, so don't be morons. All
right. Grow up.
Nikki Fink.
There you
Mike
go.
Fleming. All right. You're listening to Fat Guys and Movies with Kristen Dreyer Kramer and Kevin Carr. What time is it now?
It is time for our DVD roundup.
There we go. All right.
There's nothing to talk about.
Not a lot.
There's Boss Season 2. We got a big nothing.
Boss Season 2 is out. Have you ever watched Boss?
I haven't. No.
It's not a bad show.
It's what I've heard.
It's sort of like House of Cards without the humor and lightheartedness.
There you go.
It has Chelsea Clinton as Kelsey Grammer as a mayor of Chicago who is corrupt and causing problems.
Huh, go figure.
A good movie. I think Gus Van Sant's behind the original production, because I'm not a big fan of Gus Van Sant, but I thought he did a good job of that. Merlin Season 5 is out. That is, of course, the Sci-Fi Channel.
Yep.
King Arthur told from Merlin's point of view. That's not a bad show.
Okay.
So Season 5 is there. Naked Lunch is on Criterion, if you're a big David Cronenberg fan. Or who wrote that? Burroughs?
I'm
drawing a blank on the name of the guy who wrote Naked Lunch. It's a tough book to get through. It's a tough movie to get through, but it's an interesting film. And then I was kind of on the fence on the stinker because there's Hyde Park on Hudson, which is a...
Really? You were on the fence about that?
Well...
Because there's no fence to be on about that.
Well, no.
I mean, it is so far beyond the fence.
It's not a good movie.
It's a terrible, terrible movie.
And it was really trying to make an awards push, and it's really awkward and dumb, and it's this weird sort of BBC... sort of upstairs, downstairs with hot dogs and ancestral cousins relationships with the president.
It's a mess. It's a terrible, terrible mess.
But then there's Planet Ocean, which is basically, I thought it'd be a nice little nature documentary narrated by Josh Duhamel.
Uh-huh.
It is nonstop. Just look at what we're doing to the oceans.
Oh,
we're overfishing. Yeah. Dead in 10 years. I mean, it is like insane.
Wow.
So that one's not very good.
Okay.
That's what we got for DVDs. Kind of almost done with the show.
It's true.
Yeah. So let's review wrap up 42. We both said kind of rocks.
Kind of rocks.
That's right. Because we weren't. Like, are the people who... I wonder if the people who say give it a bad rating are going to be called racist.
I'd say there's a pretty good chance of it.
That's possible.
It's a difficult movie.
Scary Movie 5 gets a preemptive suck.
Yep.
Next week, we're going to be talking about Place Beyond the Pines, Trance, and Oblivion. Until then, we'll talk to you later.
See you next week.